Edwina Farley with you for a Country Breakfast, where we always love hitting the road with our rural reporters. This week, a project that's helping to protect baby turtles from hungry goannas on a Queensland beach. We're picking flowers that are good enough to eat and meet some would-be Aussie farmers, international students who are studying to stay in Australia. We also check out a young bull named Chivalry, being prepared for Beef Australia 2015.
Now, if I saw any other bull, I'd say this one looks pretty manly.
Yeah, he is.
And he always stands like that. He's a real showman, and I think they have to have those qualities in them for people to notice, for him to be noticed in a ring.
Preparing stud animals for Australia's premier beef expo in a moment. But first stop today, a beach in southeast Queensland, where volunteers are stepping up their campaign to protect endangered turtles.
It's an aluminium cage. We call it a cage, but it's not really a cage. I guess it's shaped like one. The idea of it is it's about a metre square, and then it has these sides that are 20 centimetres deep. It sits upside down so that the sides are pointing down into the sand, and then the flat surface is on the top.
And if it all goes according to plan, this inverted aluminium cage will give the turtle eggs inside this nest some much needed protection.
It's buried completely under the sand by about 10-15 centimetres of sand, so that the goannas, of course, couldn't dig through the top. The sides mean that the goannas can't dig in from the sides as well, unless they're going to dig 30 or 40 centimetres down. So it's proved to be a very successful deterrent from goannas being able to predate the nests.
Hello, I'm Eliza Rogers on secluded Wreck Rock Beach, just north of Bundaberg in southeast Queensland. This is a favoured nesting site of the endangered loggerhead turtle. Unfortunately, it's also home to some very hungry goannas that love nothing more than feasting on the eggs. I'm here with two veterans of the Turtle Care Volunteers Queensland group, Nev and Bev McLaughlin. This dedicated couple has spent the past 45 years monitoring turtle nests along this stretch of coastline. In fact, it was their observations about an increase in goanna numbers that led to this latest deterrent trial led by researchers from the University of Queensland.
Okay.
One of the other methods used is putting pepper or like chilli powder around the nest. How much does that help?
We're not really sure yet. That's in just initial stages. That's part of the university's project and just one of the methods they're trialling. I don't think they've had a great amount of success. It'll be an easy method. If we can find something like pepper or chilli powder that is going to keep the goannas away, it's going to be a very easy way to deter them.
There's no clear reason for the rise in goanna numbers, but it's thought it could be a flow-on effect from a fox baiting program in the 1970s. With no predators, goanna numbers have exploded.
We're just walking back to the campsite and we've just crossed a goanna track. How common is it? How much evidence do you see of the goannas around here?
Yeah, no, there's a lot. You can walk through any of the tracks and you'll find that there's zigzag with the goannas, and it's probably more so early morning and late night. And then down on the beach, once you start doing your patrols, they're just all over the beach. They're doing patrols up and down and they'll walk along and start digging anything that they can find.
Have you ever caught one in the act
of digging up a nest?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've actually got photo evidence of them digging. Last year when we had the cameras out for the project, we've actually got one of a goanna over a nest for over an hour trying to work its way to get through this metal mesh. And it wasn't going to, but it was persistent for an hour.
Well, speaking of hatchlings, we have a bucket of loggerhead hatchlings. I believe you collected this morning or late last night. So, Bev, just tell me, how many do we have in here and what's their story?
Okay, the first nest I came across this morning, I started digging through it and just found little groups of two or three hatchlings as I was going through and got right down and then found the mass of eggs, and then intermingled through them were 22 little hatchlings that had actually broken through the egg, got their head out, got their flippers out, and then that's as far as they'd gone. They'd all passed away. But the nest where it was laid was in the really soft shell grit, and it's really hard to dig. Sort of you go in and you take one flipper out or one handful out and three more will fill in. And I think that's what happened with these guys. They lost the rest of the pack and consequently they couldn't all come up at the one time. So by me going out and doing my morning shift, I've managed to save their lives. We'll let them go tonight and hopefully, if it wasn't meant to be, then they'll be the food and hopefully save something that's a little bit more healthy than what's out there now.
We certainly don't make a habit of bringing hatchlings away from the beach at all, but because these were caught in the nest, would have died in the sand had we not brought them out, we couldn't release them at the time because it was full daylight and there's goannas everywhere on the beach. So we're just keeping them here during the day today, and they'll be released tonight when it's dark and a little bit safer for them.
Does it affect their, when they, you know, when they come out and then they make their way to the water and they're imprinting and kind of familiarising themselves with their magnetic field so they can return years later, does it affect them if they are being taken away from the beach?
We hope not. There's been trials done on things like that, and as long as we keep them away from all metal substances, aluminium safe, but anything that is magnetic will upset their magnetic field. So trials have been done with various things, but we make sure we don't put them near metal things. We don't carry them in vehicles and keep them out of, or just keep them in plastic and as little interference as possible.
They're not released at the water's edge. They're released up near the dune level so that they've got the full length of the beach to walk till they get into the water. So that's where their magnetic field comes into play.
They're so cute.
Nev and Bev have been part of a long list of successes since they started volunteering as a married couple in the late 70s, continuing Nev's work dating back to 1970. Over that time, the Wreck Rock area has been included in the Great Barrier Reef Marine Park, and fishermen have had to install turtle excluder devices on their trawl nets. It's important to the couple that turtles are protected for future generations, and Bev says their children share the passion.
In 1983, had a daughter on the 21st of December. I got out of hospital with her on the 28th and she was on the beach doing her runs on the 29th. So she is the youngest researcher. She's been doing that ever since and she's only missed the last four seasons, and that's because she's now has her own family and they're currently living in Tampa doing their turtle research over there. Our son was born on 4 years later on the 5th of February, so I was a very pregnant lady doing research that season. So it's pretty involved. If someone's not doing something to protect our turtles, they're not going to be there for our children and our children's children to see that, because they are a very endangered species and we're just trying to do everything we can to make sure that they're going to be around for the future.
Come on, old fella, you want to come up?
Meet Chivalry, a Brahman bull and the pride of stud breeder Lorena Jeffress.
Why are you out in the sun?
See, he's a skirt bull.
Have a look at him, he's a nice.
Now, if I saw any other bull, I'd say this one looks pretty manly.
Yeah, he is.
And he always stands like that. He's a real showman, and I think they have to have those qualities in them for people to notice, for him to be noticed in a ring. You know, that's what I meant when I said before, they've got to stand out from the others. And he always presents himself. He always stands really well. No, I really like him.
And Lorena hopes the judges at this year's premier cattle expo, Beef Australia 2015, will think that he's pretty special too. Hello, I'm Hayley Reno, and I'm at the Elrose Brahman Stud near Cloncurry in northwest Queensland. Chivalry is just one of a handful of bulls and heifers Lorena will be taking to Rockhampton in May for the tri-annual show.
Is it once every so often you find one that has that showmanship in his blood?
Yes, yeah. He's the one I've sort of got most hopes for at Beef. They're all going to be in the junior classes, but the others, they just haven't got that air about them. He's the main one. But, I mean, you have to go with others, so, you know. Judge mightn't like what you like.
Elrose has been in the stud business for more than a century, but stopped holding on-property bull sales 4 years ago. That's why it's so important for the Jeffress family to take their best stock to competitions like Beef Australia 2015.
If you're in the beef business, you have to be at it just to keep your name there. I think, you know, We used to have sales here, and once you sort of stop, I think 5 minutes later you've forgotten. So you've got to just keep, you know, we may not be in the spotlight now, but you've got to keep your name out there so people can still see you there, because we sell our bulls in the paddock now. We can see where we're at compared to other people, and they can see us as well. I enjoy it. We're there down there for about 10 days. We look like a travelling circus. We take the gooseneck and live in that, but it's all good.
Picking the right animals can be the difference between coming home dressed with a rainbow of sashes or returning empty-handed. They need personality plus, enough confidence not to spook easily, and have good rapport with their leader.
As long as they've got the right mindset, they have to be like a horse, cool. They're the ones that listen to you and respond. If it's mad, well, you know, I don't even bother starting. There's no point. They don't want to be beside you. They don't want to be near you. That's the whole point of it. I mean, they can do what they like, but, I mean, they only want to be with you because they trust you and they like you.
Do you form a special bond with the ones that you get a bit of training time in with?
Oh, yes. I love them. I'm hopeless.
The qualities of any good bull or heifer can be passed down from mother to daughter and father to son as well. Miss Didor won at the last beef meet, and Lorena has high hopes for her daughter, who's taken the same name.
This one here, Miss Didor, is out. This is the one out of the... her mother was the one. You're right. She knows you're different, eh?
Yeah, she can see me.
You're all right, girl. This heifer here, her mother won calf champion the last beef, so it's exciting. She'll go down now and try to do the same as her mother. Her mother's got a calf on her now, and I hope to have it for next year. It's going to be the World Brahman Congress next year, and if she's still going, she'll have a calf at foot, and her young brother will end up being a junior one next year. So that's exciting when you can keep up families. That's what I enjoy.
Yeah, a bit of history there, and I saw her mum's photo hanging on the wall, so if she wins, will you put a frame up with this girl in it?
Definitely. Yeah, she's a nice heifer. She's lovely, quiet, just enjoys it. And of course she had a couple of shows as a calf on her mother. We went down to Sydney last year. She got reserve champion, so it was nice. So she sort of knows all the drill about the shows, so that's probably why she's placid too, so it won't be such a big deal for her. But the bulls have never been to anything.
It won't be long until they're all taken away for a practice run, and then it's off to Beef 2015 in Rockhampton for their final test.
How are you going? Hey, girl.
And good luck to Lorena Jefferis with her team of show cattle, including that young bull Chivalry. Still to come on Rural Reporter today, overseas students with a love of farming are studying to stay in Australia. And we're picking flowers that are good enough to eat.
I'm just packing our edible flowers to go off to the market. I'm packaging up the marigolds at the moment. I drive them down to the Melbourne Wholesale Market, and they get sold and distributed off the market floor to providors and greengrocers, and then from there distributed to high-end restaurants and specialist fruit and veg shops.
We're often reminded to stop and smell the roses, but do you ever eat them? Edible flowers and leaves are a growing craze on the Aussie food scene, and grower Lauren Richardson is being kept busy trying to keep up with demand.
Ones that are in season at the moment is rocket flowers, cornflower, rose petals, a lot of the English cottage varieties, so things like viola and pansies, geraniums, yeah, the list goes on.
Hello, I'm Margaret Buren on a farm at Glen Lyon near Daylesford in central Victoria. Today is harvest day at Forage Flavour, and Lauren and her team have just finished picking and packing 300 punnets of edible flowers and leaves.
It's just grown. We started with about 5 different varieties, so the rose petals, the violas, the pansies, snapdragons and nasturtiums. And then we've just added more aromatic and more impressive flowers like the fennel, like the pineapple sage and lavender, and more aromatic and herbal varieties that really enhance the dish rather than just a decorative and improve the appearance of the dish.
Now, you supply some of Melbourne's most renowned restaurants, including Heston Blumenthal's newly opened Fat Duck, which I suppose was a big one in the headlines for foodies around Melbourne. I can imagine there'd be a lot of secrecy involved in what they're using. Can you just disclose some of the ingredients that they're using and what they're using to make?
Unfortunately, I haven't been lucky enough to dine at the Fat Duck. I don't know what they're using it for. I can't disclose the varieties. I know Flowerdale Farm do send oyster leaves in. So there is a little bit of competition in the edible flower industry now. There's more and more growers getting involved. So we all like to have our little varieties that nobody else has yet and get first to market with those varieties. We're doing new things all the time, and I've got another customer over in Western Australia who's almost every week ringing up saying that a chef's asked him for another variety, and so that I'll test the variety, see if it's viable, see how long the season is and whether or not I agree and think that it will be something that's popular. But also a lot of chefs are really responsive to what's in season, and they rely on the growers for information on what they can put on the menu and how long it can go on their menu for and what's suited to different dishes as well. So they might ring me up for they need a small purple flower and I'll give them a list of what might be available.
And what's hot at the moment?
Well, Viola is always hot because it's a beautiful, cute little flower. But just coming into season, we have what's called Tropical Blaze or Pineapple Sage. So if you crush this in your hand and smell it, it's got
smells like pineapple.
Yeah, it's got a real tropical scent to it. So that flavour can come out in dishes. It's great for fruit salads, and it's got a striking scarlet tube-like flower that's quite visually impressive on the dish as well.
What do you think will be the next hot thing in the edible flower market?
Well, I'm a huge fan of fennel flowers. They look beautiful. They're on a frond and they have these bright yellow, tiny little flowers on the end of them, and they've got the most sensational aroma and taste, and they're well suited to the cocktail market. So to create an aniseed cocktail, or suited to desserts as well, like an aniseed ice cream. Whenever I show chefs the smells and the taste of the flowers, they're really surprised. So snapdragons, for example, have a really strong melon flavour, and you can really extract those flavours out. I made a Viola syrup, and obviously I've made rose syrups as well. So I think there's great potential in the dessert and cocktail industries for edible flowers.
Is there any sign that it may be just a passing fad or one of those foodie crazes?
It does worry me that it could be, but things like lavender rose petals have been used in cookings for centuries. I think if it's used more as an ingredient and not so much as just a pretty garnish on the plate, there'll be much more stability in the market. And I think that's probably what's going to see them last in the market, if they are used for their qualities other than just decorating a dish.
Students are pushing a mob of frostbred ewes up the race here at the Riverina TAFE College in Wagga Wagga in the southwest of New South Wales. They're heading towards a small tent. And inside the tent, professional scanner Cole Robertson checks on his ultrasound monitor to see if the ewes are pregnant, carrying single lambs or twins.
We're looking for the twins so we can separate them. There's one up there.
There's one down here?
Yeah.
Also in the tent is Certificate 4 Agriculture student Marina Van Aken.
If we can separate the twins, we can feed them better. Especially if it's dry weather. And take the empties out.
There's at least one there. That's
right. Marina comes from Holland, and like many other overseas workers with a passion for farming, is prepared to go to great lengths to call Australia home. To gain permanent residency, these students now need to upgrade their skills and complete a diploma in agriculture. Hello, I'm Larissa Smith. This demand for diplomas is filling TAFE College courses and could provide a stable workforce for local farmers in the future.
I first came out to Australia in 2009. I worked at a sheep station near Broken Hill. So I went back to, because I was still at uni, back in Holland, and so I decided to come back the year after that, and again the year after that. I'd always been interested in agriculture, but agriculture in Europe is really based, like shed-based, so that's not the kind of agriculture I wanted to be in. So as soon as I got to Australia, I discovered that it's quite a different kind of agriculture, and so I was quite interested in that, and so I decided to find out if I wanted to stay here like long term, and came out for 2 years on the working holiday visa and discovered that I really liked agriculture. And so that's when I decided to go and do TAFE course.
Was it an easy choice for you to make?
Yes, it was. And I thought about doing ag science, but I wanted to do hands-on stuff. And TAFE is perfect for that because they actually teach you how to vaccinate an animal or all the hands-on daily stuff, and you probably wouldn't get that when you're doing an ag science degree. So it was a very conscious decision. I'm going to do a TAFE, a diploma. Yeah.
So you've been pre-testing today?
Yeah, it's really nice just to actually be able to see like the spinal cord and the ribs and trying to see whether there's one or two in there. Yeah, it was a new experience. I'd seen it because I worked at a vet clinic. I'd seen it done, but I'd never done it myself.
So yeah. Perhaps a new career?
Well, possibly, yeah. Yeah.
And there are other similar stories at this campus. Justin Moore was a bricklayer in Londonderry in Northern Ireland before he decided to make the move to Australia. He's been working on a cropping farm near Finlay and hopes to manage his own farm one day.
Yeah, I'm doing my Cert 4 in agriculture last year, and then for immigration they want a diploma, so I have to do it this year.
So when you mean for immigration, is that for you to stay in the country a bit longer?
Yeah, that's for me to get sponsored by my employer and then become permanent resident. Immigration said Cert 4 was enough last year, then they changed the rules and said they want their diploma. I have to come and do it. Pretty expensive. For each course it's 11,500.
But you obviously really want to stay in the country.
Yeah, so they have to do it to extend. So if I get an Australian citizen, I'll manage a farm or even buy a farm or something. So
fellow student Tony Kim came to Australia from South Korea in 2009 and has been working on a dairy farm in Finlay ever since. Like Justin Moore, he hopes it'll become his permanent home.
Actually, before I came to Australia, I tried to get a permanent visa, such as 457 visa, but Australian government wanted me to get a more qualification about agriculture. I have been worked optical fiber in broadcast area in Korea for about 9 years, but I didn't know anything about agriculture. So actually I had experience for 2 years in Australia. Australian government wanted me more qualification, higher qualification. So that's why I studying here.
So after the 2 years, is it your hope that the kids in Finlay will sponsor you to stay on their dairy farm?
Yes, hopefully.
Have you discussed this with them?
Yeah. I want to them sponsor me, and hopefully they want me stay.
Back in the sheep yards, teacher Jonty Shooter is wrapping up the lesson.
Just come down here. Yeah. So I just want to recap what we're doing here and why we're doing it.
Without exception, the international students are all really interested in agriculture. They want to learn, they want to go back into the agricultural field, so they're very highly motivated to do well. And they're a pleasure to be around, actually. They're great people.
And they have skills before they come to these courses. They've worked on farms, they've been up north, or they've even come off farms from their home country.
They have, yeah. It's an interesting cross-section of people. There's one here who has a degree in international relations. We had a student last year who had a degree in business management, and she was off a farm in Ireland. But they all want to go into agriculture in Australia. And so as part of the requirements for becoming a citizen or permanent resident, they need to do training. And so that's one of the reasons why they're here with us, apart from the reason that they want to learn. And they are, as I said, highly motivated to learn.
Agriculture teacher Jonty Shooter from the Riverina Institute of TAFE ending that report on would-be future Aussie farmers from Larissa Smith. I'm Edwina Farley. This is a Country Breakfast on RN.